before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
And welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and as always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We've got a very special Drinking on the Last Frontier for you this month after our news and phone interview with Matt Barnaby of Barnaby Brewing Company. We'll be going live to our studio with Kenai River Brewing Company and taking your calls. So let's get to it with beer news. Midnight Sun Brewing Company celebrated its 24th anniversary on Sunday, May 5th. The brewery is the second oldest operating brewery in Alaska after Alaskan Brewing Company. As part of the celebrations at the brewery, Midnight Sun released its anniversary beer. Named simply 24, the brew is a Russian Imperial Stout. On April 30th, Senator Lisa Murkowski visited Kodiak Island Brewing Company to thank them for supporting federal workers during the recent government shutdown. Among other things, the brewery hosted potlucks and offered discounts for those who were having a tough time getting by. On May 1st, Alaskan Brewing Company released its summer seasonal Alaskan Blonde Ale. Brewed with a touch of wildflower honey, Alaskan Blonde Ale is an easy drinking and approachable summer offering. Quote, "We brewed our blonde with wildflower honey to add a subtle honey flavor and a hint of sweetness to the classic light-bodied style," said Alaskan Brewing Company head brewer Rob Day. "The moderate hop bitterness and light maltiness of the blonde creates a crisp, smooth character, while the wildflower honey comes through primarily in the aroma and finish." End quote. Since 1988, Alaskan Brewing has released seasonal beers ranging from smoke beers to winter warmers. Alaskan Blonde replaces the former summer seasonal offering, the Kolsch, which has been added to the year-round lineup. Alaskan Blonde Ale was brewed to be lower in alcohol at 5% alcohol by volume, with a move towards smoothness and refreshment and away from bitterness and hoppy flavors. Quote, "Our rotating releases allow us to experiment with new styles and to feature styles that work well with each season," said communications manager Andy Klein. "Blonde is the perfect, crisp, refreshing, and drinkable brew for long, warm spring and summer days," he explained. "We imagine bringing it back to a backyard barbecue or tossing it into your pack for a beach day." End quote. Blonde Ale's label features a massive grizzly bear, one of Alaska's most impressive predators. Alaskan grizzlies get their name from the grizzled look of their coats. During the summer, as many grizzlies roam beaches and tidelands in search of salmon and other high-protein prey, they can develop a lighter-colored blonde overcoat over their dark brown undercoat. Tickets are now on sale for the 7th Annual Beer and Bacon Festival, held at the Lakefront Hotel in Anchorage from 1 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, July 27th. The event features amazing beers and bacon bites from Alaska's premier craft brewers and creative culinary artists, all to benefit Covenant House, Alaska. Kenai Joe's, the oldest bar in Kenai, is now under new ownership. We'll have more details on this later in today's show. The founder of Portland, Maine's Allagash Brewing Company won a prestigious James Beard Foundation Award on May 6th. Rob Todd, founder of Allagash Brewing Company, which brews Belgian-inspired beers, was named a top professional in the category of Outstanding Wine, Beer, or Spirits Producer. Todd competed against five other finalists who demonstrated consistency and exceptional skills in his or her craft. He also was nominated for the award in 2017. The James Beard Awards are known as the Oscars of the food world. There are Beard Awards for chefs and restaurants, as well as for journalism and broadcast media, books, restaurant design and graphics, leadership, and lifetime achievement. Beard was a legendary cook, cookbook author, and TV personality. He died in 1985, and the James Beard Foundation was created in his memory. Todd founded Allagash Brewing in 1995. He called the nomination a huge honor and credited his employees for bringing national recognition to himself and to the brewery. Allagash is one of the largest breweries in Maine, producing 865,000 gallons of beer in 2016. Its famous white, a Belgian-style wheat beer, is a staple of craft beer menus around the country, and it also makes several seasonal releases, including spontaneously fermented series of beers and many aged ales. On Saturday, June 1st, the Alaska Farmland Trust and the Ken Peltier Band will hold the 4th annual Drink Beer Save Farms event at the Paradise Alaska Venue and Accommodations, a private farm property on Springer Loop in Palmer. You can enjoy an evening with Alaska's premier country band while dancing under the midnight sun, and all for the great cause of permanent farm protection. Farmland Trust has partnered with Future Farmers of America to provide a barbecue that will feature hamburgers, hot dogs, chips, and as many local products as possible. There will be locally brewed beer, cider, and wines for purchase. Drink Beer Save Farms swag will be available for sale. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.akfarmland.com. Last year's event sold out, so get your tickets early. Jayhawkers will soon be able to enjoy award-winning beer from The Last Frontier as Alaskan Brewing Company expands its distribution into Kansas. Six varieties of Alaskan brewing beers will make their appearance in Kansas beginning this month. Quote, "It's a long way from our brewery to Kansas, but we think the people of the Great Plains will identify with our adventurous Alaskan spirit and our passion for independent, innovative brewing," said Alaskan Brewing Company's communications manager, Andy Klein. "We're inspired by the beautiful state in which we live and brew, and we want to provide thirsty Kansans with a taste of Alaska. We're looking for a new type of beer drinker in this state. Alaskansans. That's a thing, right?" End quote. The addition of Kansas marks the 23rd state where Alaskan beer is distributed. Last spring, Alaskan Brewing announced its expansion into the St. Louis area and Missouri. Along with the Kansas expansion, the brewery will also be headed into Kansas City and the remainder of Missouri. Two major craft beer companies are joining forces. Dogfish Head Brewing and the Boston Beer Company, the maker of Sam Adams Boston Lager, announced on May 9th that they have reached an agreement to merge. The deal, which is expected to close late in the second quarter of this year, is valued at about $300 million in cash and stock. The company's founders say the merger is going to help the craft brewers compete in an industry that is seeing rapid consolidation. Industry giants have been acquiring smaller breweries. For example, Anheuser-Busch InBev now owns Goose Island Beer Company and Golden Road Brewing. Quote, "More than a dozen of our peers have sold to international conglomerates. Others have come together through platforms, bringing a handful of craft breweries together in roll-ups. The founders of Dogfish Head, Sam and Mariah Calaglione, said in a statement, "While neither of those strategies appeal to us, we did realize that Dogfish Head would be a stronger company with the support of our friends at Boston Beer and vice versa," end quote. Sam and Mariah will take nearly all of their proceeds from the merger, an estimated $128 million, in stock of the combined company, and Sam will join the board of directors of Boston Beer in 2020. The Dogfish Head shareholders are expected to receive $173 million in cash. The merged company is going to be led by current CEO of Boston Beer, Dave Berwick. Well, that's it for this month's beer news. In our next segment, we'll have an interview with Matt Barnaby of Barnaby Brewing in Juneau. Then stay tuned after that for our live show. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldano.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Up next, we've got an interview with Matt Barnaby of Barnaby Brewing in Juneau. Hey, Matt, how you doing today?
Good.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So, you just celebrated your second anniversary not that long ago, but it was not an easy road. So I've reported on some of your challenges, but maybe you'd want to tell our listeners, give them a thumbnail sketch of what happened.
Yeah, we just celebrated our second year, although in sort of a jokingly manner. We actually only operated for about a year, and then we had a fire. That fire put us out for about a year, and we actually opened up a week or two before our two-year, in quotation marks, anniversary. But yeah, we had a fire, I think it was a week shy of our one-year anniversary, and then we're out until first Friday there in April. We ended up moving locations and essentially doing everything all over again.
Why don't you describe your location and your setup that you have there in Juneau?
Our previous location, we were essentially in a basement of a building, pretty small. I think we were 1,000 square feet total. That include our brew space and tap room, slightly outside of the downtown Juneau proper. We have since relocated to a new space, essentially tripling our space, which ended up with us also tripling our brewing capacity. So we went from a one barrel brew system to a three, and we are now yards or feet away from the cruise ship docks in downtown Juneau.
So you're on Shattuck, right? What's your exact address?
Yeah, we're at 165 Shattuck Way. The easiest way to describe it is we're right behind City Hall.
Okay. Well, good. So you said you upped your brewing system, so you're running a three-barrel system now?
Yeah, so originally we thought we were going to end up going back into the exact same space, and so we were hoping to just essentially use the same equipment. Luckily, the fire really only impacted the space and not so much our equipment. But with the new lease, doing the math, we realized we would have to be able to produce a little more beer to be able to cover costs. So, yeah, we're now on a three-barrel system.
You're basically selling all of your beer right out of your storefront, right? You're not on draft anywhere?
So we have 12 taps total, two of which will have non-alcoholic products. And right now we're still just trying to keep up with the manufacturing part. So we have six beers on tap right now. So we sell four empty taps. So until we get to a position where we're sort of creating a surplus, it'll all be out of our tap room. And then we're hoping by end of summer, fall time to get some beer outside of our tap room.
I don't know, man. A three-barrel system is pretty small. It's if you've got good demand, you may find you're working as fast as you can just to keep up with your demand in your tap room.
Exactly, yeah.
I can't remember if you guys are selling crowlers, or is that something you're doing as well?
Yeah, we do. Ours are sort of a little more unique. We're not doing the 32 ounces. We're doing the 16-ounce cans, which we found to be actually pretty popular. Most people, the 32 ounces is quite a bit of a commitment, especially with some of our bigger beers. So we are doing a to-go option, but instead of the 32, we're doing 16, and we refer to them as mini crowlers. But
okay. Yeah, no, I can see where that might be. There might be a demand for that. Like you say, a 32-ounce one is it's a pretty big one to handle by yourself in one go. How'd you get into brewing? Are you a home brewer background, or you have prior commercial experience?
Yeah, so I started out homebrewing. I think I kind of followed the route of most, where it kind of started with an extract and then partial and then going full grain. And originally, when I first kicked this off, I guess it was 3 years-ish ago, was when the state first started having their financial issues and they were laying people off. And I had just started working for the state, and with their, you know, last to hire, first to fire kind of policy, I was a little nervous that I'd be losing my job. My whole life, I've essentially worked with some sort of government. And so this sort of spurred out of that. The feds aren't any better off than the state. And so, yeah, it came out of necessity and fear of losing my job. Now, ended up not losing my job, but that's how sort of spurred the commercial side of things.
What sort of hours are you keeping there? I assume you'll be possibly expanding for the summer when the cruise ships start coming in frequently, but are you open 7 days a week or just on weekends? Or what does your hours look like?
Yeah, we started 7 days a week, essentially the first cruise ship, which was the end of April. We're Monday through eight. Of course, we have the sort of by law requirement to stop serving by 8 p.m. So that's where we came up with our 1 to 8 hours. And we'll maintain that through the last cruise ship, and then we'll probably cut back a little bit, but it'll probably just be a 5 days a week after work type hours.
So is there any sort of beers that you really like to brew, kinds of beers that you really don't like to brew? You have any sort of overarching thoughts on that sort of stuff?
You know, I try to stay away from things that are trendy, but unfortunately they sell well. So for our 1 year anniversary, we were doing a hazy IPA. It's sort of a special release, and that's turned into probably what's going to be a year-round beer for us, because that is what's trendy right now. But as far as what I like to brew, I like to incorporate local ingredients. So like most recently for the Haynes Beer Fest, we did a fireweed beer, brew barb. We had a smoked beer that actually placed silver at the U.S. Open last year. So we smoked our own malt, harvested the alder ourselves, smoked malt ourselves. So anything that, I don't want to say unique ingredients, but ingredients that had a unique process to them is something that I'm always experimenting with or looking to do.
Well, speaking of Haynes, when this is broadcast, that'll be the day of the festival. Are you guys going to be there again this year?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. So last year, like I said, we had our fire, so we weren't able to pour a full booth, but we did have a little bit of that smoked beer that we had sent to the U.S. Open. So they poured that, and then this year we'll have a full booth. So yeah, we'll be there.
Great. Are you planning to hit any other festivals?
We haven't looked that far ahead. I think right now we're going to try and hit up the Great American Beer Fest again. We've always had a lot of fun going to that event in Denver. So assuming that our schedules match up well, pour that event. And then, you know, we're open to anything. The hardest thing for us, and I'm sure for the folks up there, is getting beer to festivals at a reasonable cost. So, but Juneau does their fall festival, so we'll be at that one. And yeah.
At this point, I always put in the pitch for the Frozen River Festival that we have in February up here. As far as I know, it's the only outside winter beer festival in Alaska. If you're in a position next February, give us a thought, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I said, if we can get beer there at a reasonable, affordable rate, we'll definitely be interested.
So what do you see Barnaby Brewing in, say, another 5 years or so?
We're on the 3-barrel system right now. We do have a couple 7-barrel fermenters that we're going to double batch into. I think that will probably be sort of our ultimate size, is that 7-barrel. I don't see us growing much larger than that. We're sort of happy kind of being the small town brewery. This fall, we're hoping to do a little more packaging related stuff and getting things in cans. And then that way, hopefully we can get a little bit of our product outside of the immediate Juneau area. And I think cans kind of will lend to doing that a little easier.
They definitely seem to be the packaging of the future.
Yeah.
Particularly up here, everybody's heading to cans, seem to be getting good results with them. So anything else that you'd like to tell everybody about your brewery or folks that are coming to visit Juneau?
You know, we're excited to be back up and operating, and we get a lot of folks who are visiting Juneau from around the state just to come visit Juneau. And so we always enjoy talking to those folks and sharing our beer with them.
Well, hey, good luck, Matt, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really do appreciate it.
Great. Thanks.
All right. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier and KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. And we'll be right back with our live segment. Stay tuned.
Beers of Alaska. Beer on the Last Frontier. Beers of Alaska. Sip before
Fortunate today that we've got two guests in the studio. We've got Doug Hoag from Kenai River Brewing and also Colton Herzog from Kenai River Brewing. But what they're here to talk about first is Kenai Joe's and their plans for Kenai Joe's. So, hey, who wants to start off and start talking to us about this? Colton, you're going to jump in. So, Kenai Joe's, been there since 1935, a real landmark on the peninsula. You guys have bought it. Let's hear about what your plans for the place are.
We're hoping by July 1st to open it and run it as is, as a bar, no food, until hopefully we're putting on a kitchen expansion that should be done by October, so we should have the kitchen open by October, November.
Great. So we're going to expand. You're going to offer food. You got any ideas what the menu is going to look like for food?
We're going to start off pretty slow. Start off with some sandwiches, appetizers, and then grow into some dinner entrees. We'll hopefully be able to do some whiskey dinners, beer dinners, wine dinners.
Oh, I like the sound of that. So October is your target for having the kitchen expansion open. What sort of hours are you looking at between now and then after the kitchen opens?
We haven't set any hours for when we're doing just food or just bar service, but once we start the food piece, we're hoping we'll probably have the kitchen open 11 to 9, 11 to 10 on the weekends. That way we'll be open for lunch and dinner, maybe getting some brunches over the winter.
I assume you guys are going to keep the tradition of live entertainment going there at Kenai Joe's?
Yes, we're hoping to take advantage of the beer garden and have some live music out there.
That's great. And because Kenai Joe's actually has a beverage dispensary license, or what some people would call a full liquor license, you're not going to be limited there by the way you're limited at Kenai River Tap Room, right? You're going to be able to stay open longer, have music, do other things that you're not allowed to do at Kenai River, right?
Correct. We'll be able to have live entertainment, games. So we won't be limited by that law. So we'll just be able to have a full bar, liquor, beer, wine. Hopefully have some nicer liquors. We'll have a nice cocktail menu, some specialty cocktails to incorporate into the food. We'll keep everything fresh and local as possible with the food.
Now that sounds good. You planning to make any interior changes at Kenai Joe's?
We'll be doing a little remodeling to start, and then hopefully down the road we have some pretty big plans to kind of open it up a little bit and get a better view of the bay there. But we don't want to change around too much because of the history, and we want to preserve some of that history that's in the place.
Keep the feel the way it has always been, huh?
Yes.
Well, that's good. When you're messing with a historical landmark, you don't want to change things up too much. That's great. So once again, to recap, you're talking about opening the bar in July and then the kitchen in October.
Correct.
Okay, great.
I see you have a book in front of you. What do you got there?
Oh, well, that's the Notorious Bars of Alaska. Ah. I brought it in because I thought we might need some reference material about Kenai Joe's. So this is written by a good friend of mine, Doug Vandegraaff. John Kenai Joe Conseil Sr. was born in Poland in 1896. He made his way to Alaska via New York, Detroit, and Prince Rupert and arrived in the new town of Anchorage in 1915 and then Kenai in 1917. He built Kenai Joe's Roadhouse adjacent to the Kenai River and received title to the property from the federal government in 1934. In 1935, he built the building that currently houses the bar and obtained a retail liquor license. By 1947, he had a dispensary license. The same year, he married Elsie, and together they managed the bar and a hotel and raised two sons. Kenai Joe passed away in 1970, though Elsie was a partner in the bar until 1989 when Roy Howard took over. "To Joe's we goes" is a popular sentiment for the folk who live in the area. The bar is large with plenty of room to mingle, dance, play games, and celebrate being at a truly historical Alaska institution. So that's a pretty good entry about Kenai Joe's, and I'm glad to see that it's going to be in good hands in the future, that Colton and the rest of their crew will be taking good care of it, and that people will be able to continue to go to Kenai Joe's. So that's the word on Kenai Joe's, folks. If you're a longtime Kenai Joe's fan, now you know what to expect for the future there. So Colton told us about what's coming at Kenai Joe's. Doug, what's upcoming at Kenai River Brewing?
Yeah, so today is actually a pretty special day for us. It's exactly to this day, 3 years ago, that we opened our brand new building. So it's a little bit of an anniversary, so kind of fun. And kind of to celebrate a little bit, just to enjoy the longer weekend, we are having a special barbecue out back. So we have a big smoker, and Warren Finley is actually there smoking up some tri-tip right now. And he will have that ready at noon, so you can come in all day long and enjoy a tri-tip sandwich cooked outside on this giant smoker that was smelling really great this morning right before we left.
Oh, that sounds good. So that's right. It's 3 years since you moved into the new building, and 13 years, pretty close to it, since you opened.
Right. We'll have our 13-year kind of anniversary thing coming up in June. So that's right around the corner.
Well, you come a long way from that little bitty place on Aspen where you got started, and half of a building that you shared with the hairdresser.
Yeah, it's been a really great transition into this new building. We're really starting to get the feel for it. Our production is getting way better. We've installed our new canning line's been running for a little over a year now. We're getting that fine-tuned and adding some additional cans to our product line. And we're able to do this a little more easily because we incorporated a labeling system. So now we can run bright or clear cans that are not labeled, and then they get labeled at the on the end of the machine after the beer's put inside. So that makes it really nice to be able to experiment with some different things, to do some seasonal beers. And our very first, hopefully what's going to be a standard beer, is the Grateful Red. So I know a lot of people have been enjoying that for close to a year now on draft, and now we're going to be able to enjoy it as a canned product. So that will be released this coming Friday, the 31st, at the brewery, and then it'll be stores that first week of June all across the state.
Oh, that sounds good. So last year, I guess you completed your kitchen expansion. So how's that working, things in the kitchen?
Yeah, that's been great. I'll let Colton talk about that because he's got it.
The kitchen expansion gave us a lot of room, a lot of freedom. You'll notice that things have been changing a little bit. Special board's getting a little more filled up. We were running happy hour over the winter. That'll return after Labor Day, 3 to 5, Monday through Thursday. So it's just given us some more options and more space to work with. And I have a great staff that makes that easy.
I remember one of the things you guys were hoping to start doing was pretzels. Are they coming anytime soon?
Oh, we do them on special once in a while.
Okay. Not a regular thing yet.
Not yet.
Because I like me some pretzels. That kind of takes us for the recent upcoming events here at Kenai River. So let's branch out a little bit and talk a little bit about the bigger beer scene. One of the big news items that I think I reported on, yes, I know I reported on it, was the merger between Boston Beer Company, the makers of Sam Adams, and Dogfish Head. So, Doug, you want to give us your thoughts on that and what you see that as meaning for the beer business as a whole out there?
When you look at their portfolios of beer, it made sense that the two are pretty different. So it really they complement each other, I guess, as far as a bigger diversity of offerings. And it seems to be like a pattern of what we're seeing in the industry. So I think you can only grow so large independently, and then it does, just to grab your bigger geographical area, it seems to make sense to join in with some other breweries and be able to do that.
Yeah, if you look at some of the recent statistics that have come out, most of the growth in craft brewing the last few years has actually been down at the bottom, if you will, the really smaller breweries that are selling primarily across their tap rooms. The bigger regional players like Sierra Nevada and Boston Beer, they have kind of struggled to continue to grow. So there seems to be, you know, I don't know if you would agree with this, but that the public seems to have a hunger for the next new beer. They're looking for these hyper-local, very constantly changing offerings that makes it difficult for a larger brewery that can't turn on a dime and bring out a new beer every week or every other week to compete.
Oh, yeah. People love to, I mean, when I travel anywhere on vacation, I'm always looking for the local brewery, and that's where I'm going to, whether it's eating, if they have a restaurant, or just trying the beer that's made in that community. And that's really the pattern that we're seeing across the country. People like to drink local.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I was just got back from a week in New Orleans, my hometown, that I hadn't been in 15 years, and when I was there 15 years ago, there basically weren't any small taproom style breweries. There was Abita across the lake, and they were pretty widely distributed, but they weren't facing any competition from any smaller places. And now there's smaller breweries that are on draft in some of the bars, and then there's other small breweries that are basically like a brew pub or some of our smaller breweries here in Alaska that are just selling their product through their tap room. So it's an interesting dynamic we're seeing there with these. Obviously, it's not something that can happen here in Alaska because our licensing structure doesn't really support having an unlimited number of small breweries opening because we're a limited entry state. But it's an interesting thing to be seeing in the industry as a whole, I think.
It is. And I don't think the growth has stopped in this area yet. I think we're going to continue to see more and more small breweries start up and have that taproom experience.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We've got breweries building right now. I mean, Cooper Landing Brewing Company is working on a brewery, a freestanding brewery that they hope to open in March, I think, of next year. So there's those guys, and other breweries are, I'm sure, looking at expanding places like Grace Ridge. And so, I mean, there's definitely room.
Oh, yeah.
There's definitely some room for small breweries out there. But
yeah, and really the more small breweries we have, it gets people more into the craft beer area, where maybe they're reluctant, maybe they're just not close to a craft brewery, and they're still drinking, the beer they grew up with. And now the more that people are exposed to this, the better it really makes it for everyone. Yeah, it just converts people.
So let's shift gears a little bit. And Colton, let's talk a little bit about beer and food pairing. I've been beating the drum for quite a few years, the fact that I think beer gets a short shrift from the, quote, fine dining folks out there. Though things are getting a little better. Once again, like I said, I was in New Orleans and went to a really nice Italian restaurant, which had a very extensive wine list. They only had about 8 beers on offer, but they were 8 really good beers. I ended up having an Innis & Gunn Porter, which is from brewed in Scotland, and they had on their menu, and it went perfectly with the food. So I'd wonder if you'd like to talk to us a little bit about what you think about pairing beer with food and beer dinners, whiskey dinners, those kind of events, which I think we really do need to have more of in this town. Any of you restaurateurs that are out there listening, I've been, that's another thing I've been advocating for quite a few years. But anyway, so Colton, why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
I think it's a very underrated thing, beer and food pairings. Most people are thinking wines and food, and I think it's a big draw right now. We try to have a few every winter at the brewery, but hopefully with Kenai Joe's opening up, we can have some beer pairing dinners there. And I think they're more unique than a wine pairing dinner. There are a couple restaurants around that do, I think almost monthly, a wine pairing dinner, but I think it's more exciting with the beer. And then you can have our head brewer Joe, and we can have Doug out there talking about the beer. It gets everybody involved in the business into one dinner service, and gives us a unique chance to cook different items that we're not cooking every day, so we're changing it up. And
well, come to think about it, one of the big advantages at Kenai Joe's is you'll be able to have beer dinners that feature beers that aren't from Kenai River. Right now, to have a beer dinner at Kenai River, it has to all be Kenai River beers, right?
Correct. With Joe's, then we'll also, like I mentioned before, be able to do liquor and wine dinners. We might do an occasional wine dinner. I'd rather stick with beer, liquor. It's a little more unique, and that's what we're trying to be, a little more unique. Bring something to Kenai that they're looking for or don't realize that they're looking for yet. So our draft list is going to be, it's going to have some Kenai River Brewing on it, but we're hoping to stick with some local smaller breweries in Alaska. We'll probably have Midnight's on down and see what else we can bring in, try to keep it local as possible and fill in some tap lines that way.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll have a decent bottle list too, because I think that's always a nice addition there. I mean, beer on draft is great. It tastes great. But there's also something to be said for the presentation of somebody bringing out a nice cork bottle to the table and opening that and people drinking it. You know, that I think sometimes that's how wine beats beer, is that it's got this whole cachet of the presentation and everything associated with it. And people don't realize that beer can be just as elegant in its presentation and everything as wine is.
Yeah, I would completely agree. The wine thing, it's just the wine service. Everybody likes to see that. They feel a little more special when that comes to the table. It's just like a tableside dessert, or when you go to a Mexican restaurant and they have guacamole handmade on at the side of the table. It's just all about the show. It's showmanship.
Yeah, we taste with our eyes, not with just our tongues as well. As they say, tasting is an entire sensory experience. Let's talk about beer festivals. You know, we've been blessed here in the area. We've got the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival that's coming up the second Saturday in August. That's been around for, what is it? It must be coming up on 9, 10 years now.
It might be 9, yeah.
It's been in for quite a while. And the Frozen River Fest, of course, is in February, which Doug had a big hand in getting off the ground and is still one of the big supporters. So why don't you talk for a minute from as a brewery owner perspective, what attracts you to going to a particular beer festival, and you know, yeah, what are the good ones, what are the bad ones, Doug?
So I guess the one thing we really appreciate for a beer festival is that it's kind of tied in with a nonprofit or like a really good cause or a benefit. That's probably one of the first things that we look at. And we try to go to as many as we can, and it's really fun, but it gets very challenging in the state because there are a lot, and they, of course, our state's very large. We do have Joe down in Haines right now. Today is the Haines Beer Festival, which is going on, has been going on for many, many years.
Over, it's the oldest one in the state,
I think,
I believe.
It is the oldest,
it's
yeah.
Just like its 26th year, I think,
right,
something like that.
Right. So that's a fun one to go to if you're ever in Haines over Memorial Day weekend. Occurs every year, so that's a fun one. It really comes down to that, though. What is the cause? What are we looking at? How is it organized? We have no problem donating beer to things like that.
Yeah, and then once again, the one in Haines is there to support the state fair, the Southeast State Fair. So once again, that's a nice cause. And our local one here in August, that is put on by the Soldotna Rotary. So once again, all the money that's raised there gets spent back again in the community to support Rotary. The Frozen River Fest isn't actually trying to raise any money, which is why the tickets are relatively cheap. That's put on by the Soldotna Chamber of Commerce to just kind of promote Soldotna in February, right, which was kind of a tough sell, which is why we came up with a Frozen River Festival idea to get people to come to Soldotna in February. If you haven't ever experienced that, I really encourage you to give it a try. It's not often that you have a outside beer festival in Alaska in February.
And coming right up, we do have, what is it, the 6th, 7th, and 8th of June is the River Festival with the Kenai Watershed Forum. So they'll be having some great music all weekend long, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that's another great event for the entire family.
So if you got any questions out there, 283-8414, call in and ask.
So if you don't mind, Doug, so beer trends. So IPA has been the trendy, cool thing, sweeping the nation, all kinds of IPAs. If you're going to be a brewery and meet demand, IPA is like the thing that you've had to do for however long that has been a thing.
Exactly.
So I am curious, because I do enjoy an IPA, but I'm personally someone who likes variety, so I'll get an IPA one time, and then an ale another time, and then a sour another time. So I'm wondering, A, if you can like predict the next trend in beer that's going to sweep the nation. And then I also am wondering, not that IPAs aren't a wonderful beer, but how does a trend become a trend? Is it because brewers really enjoy brewing this one thing, and obviously in IPA there's a lot of room for variety, so at least you're not, that can't be that boring to brew over and over again because there's a lot of different things you can do with it. Or is it more consumer driven? Is it like the brewers who are leading the trends, or is it the consumers that suddenly all have a meeting somewhere and say, you know what, we all want IPAs, and then you guys have to follow? So where does the trend come from, and then if you can predict what you think the next one is going to be?
I think it is definitely driven by the market, maybe a little more than the brewers, but it's somewhat of a combination there, because obviously if we really like a beer, we're going to kind of think about it a little harder and really put a little effort into the recipe development. Yeah, I don't think IPAs are going anywhere, there's a lot of new variations. The Brut IPA, kind of like the champagne version, that's one that has sprung up. The hazy IPAs, kind of like what they call like a New England style, so it's a little different brewing situation there, and a different look to the beer as well, like a juicy IPA, I guess you'd call it. So yeah, like I said, IPAs, they're always evolving, and they are fun to brew. There are so many things that you can do, and so many things you have to do during the brewing process, the way you do your hop additions and things like that. So and the variety of hops, I mean, my word, they're like hundreds and hundreds, so that makes it fun, and there's new ones every year. So yeah, IPAs are definitely there. As far as like a trend on a just a personal level, I have always been a hophead, and I would sit down at a microbrewery, and the very first section I'd look at would be the IPAs. And within the last 3 or 4 years, now the very first section I look at are the light lagers, or their light ales. What does this brewery make that is just really light and refreshing? And I think the reason I do that now is if a brewery can nail down a light beer, they can make anything and it's all going to be good. But the light beer is the most challenging because there's nowhere to hide any brewing mistakes. So I guess where my thought is on that. I mean, you can do a big imperial stout, and you could make a few mistakes in that, and you're not going to know. I mean, it's one of those things. So
somebody accidentally dumps a can of tomato sauce in there, and you never, I don't
fine.
Know how that
It'd
would happen,
fine.
But.
Well, there's also the, if we're going to predict trends, I predict that the next trend will be mild ales, because Doug is going to brew a mild ale, and it's going to be incredibly popular, and it's going to be his next takeoff a beer. Talking about trends for the IPAs, that's something I saw, once again, just traveling around recently. Everybody is brewing the New England-style hazy, juicy IPAs. Those seem to be the it beer now, if you can use that term, which probably means that trend is about to fizzle out and move on to some other sort of some other kind of IPA or some other kind of beer.
Right. I like the seasonality of a lot of the brews too. So there are certainly, we always keep a few dark beers on our tap list. But we'll get a little heavier during the winter season with some bigger, maybe higher alcohol, darker beers, and then once we hit the spring and summer, we tend to go a little lighter, maybe a little fruitier. We just had, unfortunately, it sold out, but we had this Blood Orange Hef that was absolutely amazing, and we are going to revisit that one this summer because it was just so good and it went so fast. So the seasons definitely kind of dictate what we're going to brew as well.
Some of that's driven by demand too, right? In the sense that you, in the summer, you guys are turning and burning, making beer as fast as you can, trying to keep up with all of our turistas that come into town. And during the winter, things slow down a little bit. You can tie up your tank a little longer and age some stuff that's going to be bigger and heavier.
Right. Yeah. Do like a Doppelbach or a bigger lager. I always.
Are you going to do another Doppelbach, Doug?
I don't know if I can tie up my tank for 4 months again.
Yeah, for first Frozen River Fest, right?
It was
a Doppelbach, and it didn't quite progress as planned. It was great beer when it got finally
turned
finished,
out though. Amazing, but yeah, it took a little time.
You know, you watch these trends, and another one that I would be interested in you commenting on that I just was reading an article about was pastry stouts. So these seem to be kind of a not to the same extent as IPAs, but a lot of breweries seem to be taking a stab at those styles. So have you had any of those? You have any thoughts about them?
I haven't. I mean, what are there some local ones that...
I don't think I've had any that were brewed in Alaska. Okay. I've seen like Southern Tier did that creme brulee mm-hmm. stout a while back, and some of the others out there, breweries seem to be trying to brew a stout that tastes like a tiramisu or a stout that tastes like an Oreo cookie.
There's a brewery in my hometown in Pennsylvania where I grew up that actually just did a tiramisu. Now that you mentioned that, I have not had it. They just released it. But yeah, those are interesting.
It strikes me as it's not something you're going to have very many of.
Right. Kind of like a s'mores beer, everybody.
Yeah. Huh.
We made that a while back, and people want us to do it again, but we probably never will. So, Music in the Park coming
up.
Oh,
yes. Why don't you mention that?
Yeah, so Music in the Park. The Chamber of Commerce received a, what's the name of the
Levitt grant? Amp.
The Levitt Amp, yes. This awesome grant that has allowed them to kind of diversify the music a little bit. So we're still having some really great local musicians, and then they're bringing some other folks that we haven't seen on the peninsula before. So yeah, that'll be every Wednesday starting really soon. Like
I think it's the next, sixth.
Yeah, the sixth. So yeah, that's going to be that'll be a lot of fun. It's going to just be a blast.
And you guys will have the beer and wine garden there like you did last year, right?
Yep. I think the beer and wine will still be rolling, and we'll be hoping to keep ahead of everybody there.
Once again, that kind of goes back to the whole concept that you, Colton, kind of mentioned about wanting to use local food, local ingredients, local beer, local music. We're going to have these markets, the Wednesday market during the day, and then the music in the park in the evenings. The various other farmers markets are starting up around the area. And I think that's really important, that if you want these sorts of things, you need to get out and support them. You need to get out and support them just like you need to support this radio station. If you want good local anything, you have to vote with your dollars. You have to vote for good local public radio. You have to vote for good local beer. You have to vote for good local food. If you don't do that, you're not going to have it. That's basically, that's the way the world works. Well, I guess that's going to wrap things up here on this first ever live Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. If you've enjoyed this show, then please call 283-8433 and sign up for a membership. It's your memberships that keep this radio station on the air and keep me on the air. If you can't stand this show, then please don't hold it against the station. They're doing the best they can working with me, and make a donation anyway, and maybe they'll be able to afford somebody better than me in the future. So I want to thank my guest, Doug Hoag from Kenai River Brewing, and Colton Herzog from Kenai River Brewing. Thanks, guys, for coming on. Look forward to seeing Kenai Joe's in July.
Thanks, Bill, and thanks, KDLL. It's a great show.